You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You are listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, and I'm your host, Liz Carlisle. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am so glad you're here, as always. And like always, I have an empowering guest for you. This week, it's all about riding the waves of life, the inevitable ups and downs that will happen. And I feel like the theme of this show forever has been that it's not about eliminating stress from your life, because that will always be there. This is what life is about. It's about feeling everything and having highs and having lows and just journeying through that. What I'm more interested in is how to get through those lows, to get through those stressful moments as best as I possibly can. And that is what my guest is here to teach us all this week. I'm speaking with renowned yoga expert, entrepreneur, and founder of Uplifted Yoga, Brett Larkin. And she is your guide on a journey to mindfulness, balance, and joy through the transformative practices of yoga and breathwork. Now, Brett's path from anxiety to pioneering a multi-million dollar business is not just inspirational, but a testament to yoga's profound healing impact beyond the mat. Now, in her latest book, Yoga Life, Brett is sharing empowering strategies on how to foster joy amid life's chaos. So again, it's not about eradicating stress. That's impossible. But it's about mastering the art of riding the wave and emerging stronger on the other side. So I'm so excited to share this episode with you. If you love it, please share it with a friend and tag us at Motherhood Unstressed on Instagram. And please enjoy this episode with Brett Larkin. Well, hello, Brett. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. I mean, your story and your new book are incredible. Even just starting with the introduction, I was blown away with how raw and honest you're being right out the get. Like, it grabbed my attention. So can you give our listener a little bit of background about your story, what led to the writing of the book, and specifically that night that you hit rock bottom?
Yes. Well, I'm someone who loved yoga, never thought I could make a living as a yoga teacher. Ironically, now I run a very large yoga company, so I definitely have made a living as a yoga teacher and at some point employed my husband, and I employ a team of 12. So lots of self-limiting beliefs were slayed. But what you're talking about is when I was running the aforementioned business, but also became a new mom and lost my dad to cancer that same year. So one of the years in which my business was really scaling, I remember that I had my newborn in one bedroom in my house and my dad in hospice care, literally in the bedroom next door. And it was like this weird combination of life events walking through the portal of new motherhood, which is extremely challenging. I mean, it just completely changes what you're able to do, how much you're able to work, what you're capable of, what your body's going through, and then walking my dad through this death portal at the same time. I'm an only child. My parents are divorced. My dad never remarried. So when I say I was his sole care provider, like, I'm not kidding. And what happened during that rock bottom year, and this is what I open with in the book, it was extremely humbling because I wasn't able to practice yoga the way I had been practicing up to that point. Up to that point, I was doing 60-minute classes, 90-minute classes. A lot of times I was teaching at studios and then going to the class after, whoever taught after me. I was very strict about how long I had to meditate, how long I had to do certain poses. I was very rule-based. You know, I had to do this before I could do that. And all of a sudden, when I hit this kind of year of chaos, all of that went out the window. And I remember feeling really desperate, like, can yoga help me now when I don't need to like meditate to achieve enlightenment? I just need to survive until bedtime. Like, how am I going to get till bedtime? Could yoga help me amidst the chaos of what was my new normal, which was like diapers and bedpans and wails and screaming from every room of my house? Mm-hmm. And it's that moment that led to the framework, the personalization and the yoga habits that I then put many years later in the book.
Did you know when you were going through this, when you were starting to like
carve your own escape ladder towards salvation or at least sanity. Did you know that you were ritualizing these things or making it almost listing it to your survival, or were you just doing what you needed that day?
There was a moment. So I was doing what I needed to survive each day. So how I started practicing during this chaotic time, just so listeners can get a picture, is I would set a timer on my phone for however long I had to practice. Sometimes that was 5 minutes. Sometimes it was seven. Sometimes it was 10. And it would literally be like a countdown timer. And what I would do, you know, they say necessity is the mother of invention, right? So I would just go to my yoga mat. And because I was a teacher, I had been teaching for a long time. I mean, I knew all the styles of yoga. I knew all the tools. But what I did that was different was, knowing I only had 10 minutes, I would tune deeply inward. And I would say, what would be nourishing for me right now? Like, what would be the most nourishing thing that I could do? And then I would do that, even if it was kind of breaking some of the yoga rules that I had learned, or even teach and train others in terms of sequencing or alignment or mix and matching different styles of yoga. Like, I just threw the entire rule book out the window and I would just practice until the timer went off, because I was just like, I just need to nourish myself as fast and quickly as possible. I remember one day very distinctly, I had set the timer for, I think, 20 minutes. It was a good day. Like, that was a good day for me. And I was doing this kind of really intense personal practice. And I got to this place where I was like, wow, I feel so good. You know, that yoga glow some of you might have experienced, like after you go to a great class. I felt that. And then I thought, crap, my timer hasn't gone off. And I thought my phone died or that something happened. But then I looked at my phone and I still had like 2 minutes left. I was able to get myself into this place of extreme calm and groundedness in just 16 minutes. And I remember thinking in that moment, like, that's crazy. I feel as good right now as I would as if I had gone to like a 90-minute group class. There's something here. That's really interesting. And what I didn't know at the time is that because I was, you know, tuning in and practicing yoga poses and breath work that were really well suited for balancing my personality and integrating what I call the soulmate postures, not just like the 5 to 7 yoga poses that every woman needs to know that really nourish her and get her into a flow state. Because I was integrating those things, I was able to feel so fantastic and just like grounded and calm in such a short amount of time. And I didn't have time then to figure it out, because I didn't even know what had happened exactly. But I made a mental note. I was like, when I survive this year, I'm going to figure out how I did this, and then I'm going to teach it to every single woman I know. And that's the personal ritual framework that I lay out in the book.
What are some of those soul poses?
Well, they're going to be different for each of us, those soulmate poses. I have an area of the book. Well, one thing I want women to know is that this book has quizzes. So if you're...
I love that.
Yes. I don't know if, like me, you remember doing... I feel like we're around the same age. Like, do you remember doing those like Cosmopolitan
or
like 17 magazine quizzes at like summer camp when you were like 13? I was like, I want the book to have like that.
I love that.
So the quizzes are just like very... We start with a personality quiz, because what so many people don't know is that you should practice a very different type of yoga or different styles of yoga pending your personality. And when I say personality, I mean like according to Ayurveda, which is the sister science of yoga, like the primary element within you. So like I have high fire, for example. Other people might have high earth, but this is not hard to figure out. And if you can figure it out, it's going to like really take you down the road of meeting those soulmate poses, because what is appropriate for one woman, like a breathing technique or a pose that she should indulge in, might be something that you, who have a different dominant element, actually need to avoid. And no one ever talks about this. Yoga has just become this like group fitness thing, because when yoga came west, it got kind of enmeshed with the Jane Fonda group fitness movement that was sweeping the US at that time. But I actually, in the book, show that that's actually never what yoga was about. It was always meant to be personalized. It was always meant to be nourishing for the practitioner. These poses were meant to adapt to us, not us shoehorn into them. So there's actually a quiz that can help you find those soulmate postures. But to give people ideas right now, the soulmate poses are the ones that help you deepen your breath the fastest and the most efficiently. So I think the big misconception about yoga is that you need to be flexible or shoehorn yourself into these fancy poses. But actually, the real benefit that you're going to get from a yoga practice is just one thing. How deeply are you breathing?
Yeah.
And this is great news, especially if you're a busy mom, because you can hack your breathing anywhere, anytime. I can change how I'm breathing just right now as I'm talking to you. And you can probably even tell the difference in the cadence of my voice. So knowing that we can shift our nervous system through this barometer, this internal thermostat of our breath, is so powerful. And the breath chapter is the longest chapter in the book. And it was the hardest to write as well. Mm-hmm. So your soulmate postures are going to be those movements that get you breathing deeper, faster. A lot of you might know cat-cow. That is a very simple, you're on all fours in a table position. And what's really beautiful about it is you're inhaling and kind of arching the spine, rocking forward, exhaling, pushing your palms into the ground, rocking back. For me, cat-cow is one of my soulmate postures because I find that the way it synchronizes my breath and movement gets me into that flow state a lot faster than some other movements, let's say. Mm-hmm. And it's really nourishing for me because it's close to the ground. So if you're stressed and overwhelmed, I talk about this in the book, but like you want poses close to the ground. Because you could argue, well, Brett, you could link breath and movement in that same way doing like a fancy sun salutation. But that's not as nourishing for me specifically if I want to ground, right? So it's like fusing these different elements of what you know about yourself and then maybe what you know you need in a given day. But thinking about those poses, like if anyone's been to a yoga class, just think like, what are those poses that you love to do? Like when you hear the teacher say to do them, be like, ah, yes, like I love this movement. It feels good. Or when the teacher says, okay, we're going to move on and do something else now, you're kind of like, oh, I kind of like doing that. Like I wanted to do cat-cow longer. Sufi grind, which is like a big movement where you spiral the torso or just like kind of it's opening up the hips and low back. It's very simple. So this is another thing that I found, like the soulmate postures are the simple ones because when a pose is simple, your breath is able to take over and your thinking mind is able to go offline. The problem with sun salutes or some of this more complex yoga choreography is that it's actually working the brain. The linear part of the brain that's overactive is like continuing to stay overactive. And again, it's still beneficial because you're moving and linking breath and movement. But if you want that like potent healing in a very short amount of time, the best thing you can do is like really soothing movements that are calming your nervous system and kind of let your brain shut off. So another criteria I have for some of these soulmate postures is like you can see it once and then you can just do it with your eyes closed, like poses that are that simple. So listeners, I would think about poses that you love, poses that you feel sad when the teacher says to stop doing them, poses that feel nourishing, poses that you feel usher you into your deepest breath state, right? All of these things that we've talked about.
I love that. And it is so personalized, right? And I love that even your definition of yoga is different than the norm, you know, especially that's prevalent in these yoga classes and what's espoused there. What is your personal definition of yoga?
Yeah, let's talk about that. The way I define yoga in the book and myself personally is awareness of your mind chatter. So anytime that you gain an awareness of your thoughts, to me, that is yoga. And how we gain awareness of our thoughts is through the breath, right? The yogis used to say the more space between your breaths, meaning the more you slow down your breath, the more space between your thoughts. So this is really valuable to us as moms because I like to say the strongest nervous system in the room wins. One of my closest mom friends taught me that. She's an amazing yogi. So if your nervous system is calm, if your breath is long and slow and regulated, your kids feel that. Yeah. They pick up on that. It might not be instantaneous, but I promise you, like if my kid is having a temper tantrum and I'm doing the thing where like, you know, when you lock yourself in a room with them and they just like try to get out of the room and they're screaming and crying.
Oh, I'm already out of the room. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah. I've got really little guys. So like my 2-year-old, I sit in the room and just wait for him to calm down. And he calms down in half the time if I'm just practicing long, slow, deep breathing the whole time I'm there with him. So the definition, sorry, to come back to what we were talking to is for me, it's an awareness of your breath And it's that gives you an awareness of your thoughts. And if you have your awareness of your thoughts, it's very powerful because you can choose to respond instead of react. So if you just practice one deep belly breath today, and we can talk a little bit about what that's like and what's involved, to me, that's a yoga success story. Like if I pause and notice my breath, notice how I'm feeling, notice my habitual reactions, notice my mind chatter, get my breath really deepening in my body, I practice yoga. Even if I'm not on a mat, even if I'm not doing some sort of shape or pose, that's my definition. And in contrast to that, if you're doing some super fancy pose, like a headstand or a backbend with another person on top of you, like we see on Instagram, but you're thinking about what to order for dinner and do I look good? And, the mind is racing and you're tense, like holding your breath. To me, you're not practicing yoga, even if you might be in a shape that looks technically like a yoga posture.
Yeah. Do you think you got to this position because you had this really extensive yogi background? You had taught and attended classes for years and years. Did it take those 10,000 plus hours to become a master to realize that you don't need to follow all the rules? And for someone who's just starting a yoga practice, can they jump right into what you've learned, or do they have to go through that as well?
Well, it's such a great question. I would love everyone to take 200-hour online teacher training with me, because that's what I do for a living, is I train yoga teachers, and we have a lot of moms in there. People can take the training with kids on their lap because it's all online. So you can watch it on your mobile phone, the home study portion, and then the live portion. It's like so family friendly, and it's designed to fit into busy lifestyle. So I think everyone should do yoga teacher training because it's literally like the life school that we never got. I'm like, why in high school biology did I dissect a frog and not learn how to like regulate my nervous system? It's just bizarre. But so there's so much great like anatomical knowledge and philosophical knowledge that will really change how you parent and live your life. However, I realize not everyone can do that 200 hours. And that's why I wrote the book, because I realized like, no, the answer is no. You don't need to know everything. You just need to know a couple key ingredients, like a couple key levers to pull, right? Like you need to understand the thing I was talking about earlier with the elements, right? You need to understand a couple things about linking breath and movement. But after that, right, you know what feels good for you. And so if you reframe your yoga practice as like, I'm doing something that's nourishing for me, and you just ditch everything else, you're going to crave your yoga practice. You're never going to want to skip it. And for those who are just worried or struggling, like, that's what the book is for. And if you're still struggling, there's the quizzes that literally tell you, like, just do this. So you kind of assemble a little personal ritual as you go through the book. You need to know enough, but you don't need to know everything to make a personalized practice.
Yeah. And I love how your definition of yoga really is in alignment with meditation. And it seems like, you know, this yoga of awareness is something that people really need to go through and do the work to get the most benefit. What would you say to the people listening, the women listening, who are afraid to go within, to face the demons, to face the darkness that they've been dealing with potentially since childhood? It's, you know, it sounds a little dramatic, but it's not really, because that's where you meet your true self, is when you get quiet. What would you say to her to encourage her to take the journey, to have the courage to do it?
Well, I mean, people listening to this are parents, right? Moms. So you do it for your kids. You do it to evolve the generational healing and to heal your wounds. Because if you don't, I promise you, you're passing them on, not intentionally, but even like subconsciously to your kids. So a lot of times when I don't want to get on the mat for me, I'm like, I want to get on my mat for my family. Mm-hmm. A, to role model for my children's self-care, but B, because I know I'm going to show up as a better wife and mom and caregiver if I center myself, if I take care of myself. I can so relate to, you know, in the stretch chapter in the book, I talk about how as a yoga teacher, I see more tears in that stretch section of class than in any other portion, because all of a sudden there's nothing to do except hold and breathe in a stretch. While a lot of the other parts of yoga, as I said, we kind of have the choreography of the yoga poses to like entertain us, right? So our mind is like, okay, left foot, you know, back heel to front arch, like squat, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces. So it's kind of like entertainment for our brain. But then you get into meditation, like you mentioned, or you get into a long held seated stretch, and you don't have any of what I call the adult pacifiers, your phone, social media, TV to numb or distract you or to reach for. And all of a sudden, like bubbles in a champagne glass, like emotions start to bubble to the surface when you have time to like pause, breathe, and tune inward. I guarantee you, I'm getting chills. If you're listening to this, like there are emotions buried deep within you that you haven't been willing to feel. And those may come up. But that is where it's like what we don't release becomes suppressed and then controls our actions and behavior, right? So that's why it's so beautiful to create some time and space. It doesn't have to be long, but to just let those emotions come up in a safe space, in a healing space. It's an act of courage. I'm not going to lie. But I think if you have kids, it's like you really want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I think becoming a mother is one of the most courageous things you can do because it's like you're thrown into the unknown. I mean, literally. And there's no going back once you're in it. I mean, I think that was like my biggest realization when I had my first son. It hit me, you know, and it was almost like one of those rock bottom moments where it's like, I need to get through this and I need to be healthy and strong and not lose myself completely, but also to be here for him and to do the best job I can. Because that's really the driver, I think, at the end of the day for all of us mothers. You know, we want to do the best job we can do. And when it really gets hard in those days and those nights, it's like we need to dig deep. And having a healthy practice like this is so essential.
And a practice that's adaptable and changes. So I think that's really important that we talk about because, you know, in the book, we create this kind of 20-minute ritual. But then I say, let's tear it apart. You know, the last part of the book is like, okay, we've created this 20-minute thing and that's the ideal, but here's how you'd change it and make it 5 minutes. Here's how you'd make it 10 minutes. Oh, babysitter's here and the whole house is clean. Here's how you'd make it 60 minutes. But the reality is we need to be able to adapt our personal ritual to our life. So this is an additional layer of complexity. It's like once I've designed something that's balancing for my dominant element that really suits my personality, well, life is happening around me. So maybe I need to give a big presentation at work. I want to, you know, just sprinkle in some more energizing breathwork or poses. Or maybe my baby didn't sleep all night and I'm so tired. So I need like a 10-minute thing that's extremely restorative. And so I actually kind of teach you, I'm like, okay, if in scenario A, you just, you know, do this part of the ritual. Like you just do the stretch section or you'd pair, you know, stretch and meditate, or you'd pair this breath work. So the visual I like to give for this, which is a little bit strange, but it's like, if you've ever been to like an apothecary or visualize like a bar with all these like tinctures and medicines behind you, right? It's like, I want every woman to know how to whip up a yogic cocktail, let's say, like a yoga healing tonic to meet her in the kind of day that she's having. And again, you don't need 200 hours. You just need to read this book and like you'll be set, because otherwise we just get overwhelmed by life. We skip our practice. We don't take care of ourselves. We need practices that can adapt to the moment, because otherwise we end up just not practicing at all. And this skill I call the skill of yogic adaptability. I've coined that term. I don't hear anyone else talking about this, because to me, an advanced yoga practitioner isn't the one doing the fancy pretzel poses. To me, the advanced practitioner is like, how well can you adapt your ideal practice to the messy moment of life that you're in right now? That's why the book is called Yoga Life, Habits, Poses, and Breathwork to Channel Joy Amidst the Chaos, right?
Right.
Because that's what this is focused on. We have a million books already about how to practice different yoga styles and adhere to someone else's rules. This is about like, how do I make this work for me even when all the conditions are less than ideal? Many of the people graduating from my yoga teacher trainings, like they're extremely knowledgeable. Maybe they have 500 hours of study with me. I give them like a cold room, floor, no mat. And I'm like, you have 5 minutes to practice something that's super nourishing and powerful for you. They won't know what to do.
Mm.
But you can do something. And these little things really do add up. I want to make sure we talk about that and actually the science behind that as well.
Yeah, please, like, talk about that. Why do these small, tiny habits where we sneak it in here, we sneak it in there? Why is that so powerful? Why is that better than a 90-minute class?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say don't do a 90-minute class. That's phenomenal. Like if you can do it,
it's hard.
Do that. But I'm thinking like most women I know, caring for elderly parents, caring for kids, moms, like we need additional options, right? So the analogy I like to use here, because what I find is, again, even my most advanced students, they wouldn't know what to do in that 5 minutes. And they also wouldn't think that it would be worthwhile, right? Mm. They'd be like, why would I bother? It's not enough time. It's like watching 5 minutes of a movie, right? You're like, why would I do that? But this is the analogy I like to use. I think we can all agree here. If we opened a savings account at a bank and we started putting money into it a little bit each day, that money would grow. Not only that, but there'd be probably a compound interest effect if we invested the money, or, you know, interest, like where that money would grow even without us doing that much about it. So there's definitely, we could agree that there's benefit in opening a savings account and depositing a little bit of money into it each day. So now I want you to think of your nervous system like that savings account bank. And when we take that viewpoint, it's like even just one moment of deep breath work and an argument with your spouse or amidst chaos is worthwhile. Even if I just do 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, deep, deep, deep belly breath at a red light in the car, right? Like that's 10 cents, 20 cents, a dollar going into that nervous system bank. So the results of your practice are cumulative. I'm going to say that again because it's so important. The results of your practice are cumulative, meaning that they're adding up over a span of time. And the really cool thing is, say at that stoplight, I don't just do a deep belly breath, but I actually do, I don't know, a couple moments of a breath work that's really well suited to my personality and balancing for me. All of a sudden, that 10 cent deposit becomes like a 50 cent deposit, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm making it more powerful because I'm personalizing it to me and the little time I have. So it's interesting to me because I see advertisements for personalized shampoo. I'm sure other people are getting that on Facebook. Personalized medicine is the new norm. Mm-hmm. Personalized vitamins. Like we know that personalization is more powerful, yet no one's personalizing their yoga, breathwork, and meditation practice. So I don't know, is that analogy kind of helpful to start thinking about like, yeah, these little things do add up and they do matter when I visualize it like accumulative, like stuff I'm putting in a metaphorical savings account?
Oh, 1000%. And I think the opposite even drives it home even more. You know, if you're on your phone too much or you're having these automatic negative thoughts or you're just, you know, you're irritating your system more and more and more, one day you're going to be dealing with potentially a disease or just, you know, autoimmune issues. And you're like, oh, well, it's because I've been abusing my mind and my body all these times, little by little every day. And so, of course, you know, if you flip it around and do things that fulfill you and support your nervous system and support your body, it's going to, you don't always have to calm everything down. It's like, you're good. Your baseline is good.
Yeah. One of the things I talk about in the book is what I call yoga habits. I love the yoga habits because there we're operating off the assumption that even your 20-minute ritual, which you can make modular into like a 5-minute ritual, didn't happen. Like it still didn't happen, right? Because this is real life, right? You'll oversleep. Someone is sick, right? So then the sprinkled throughout the book are what I call these yoga habits, which are basically little ways that you can sneak yoga in between other activities, even if you're nowhere near a mat, like in your car, for example. Or I make tea a lot because I love tea. Now, if I'm making tea and the water's boiling, I use that sound of the water boiling and waiting for the water to boil to connect with my breath. I press into the kitchen counter. I do some like gentle stretches. I might do a side bend, right? Instead of scrolling on my phone. It's all these ideas of like little habits, little ways that you can just inject either Vedic wisdom, meaning yogic wisdom, into how you're interacting with people, like your spouse or your kids. I give a lot of practical examples from my own life. or again, a lot of this is about releasing perfectionism. I think so many women, you know, we think something can only be meaningful or spiritual if it looks like a scene from Eat, Pray, Love with like an ego retreat in Bali and a white light. And the big message I want to share is like, that's just not true. When you drop that belief, I've had some of my most powerful spiritual experiences in my pajamas, practicing, you know, like a 20-minute thing with laundry around me in my bedroom, right? Like it doesn't have to be pretty or perfect for it to be potent. I might do cat-cow. I always love to share this. Like we have like a larger bathroom. My husband and I each have our own sink. And so sometimes my husband will be shaving and I have yoga mats in every room. So I'll just roll out my bathroom yoga mat and I'll just do some cat-cow and talk to him while he's shaving. And I'm doing some essential spinal movement and just kind of getting a little self-care in. And we're talking about weekend plans, right? Mm. So like, is that ideal? No. What would be more ideal is like solitude potentially, but it does count. At least it's something. And my spine, guess what? Feels better.
Right. How long do you think it takes to start implementing, when you start implementing these habits, for it to become almost ingrained, where your body is craving it? You know, if you're someone who's never done this before, but you want to start doing this, how long does it take? Is it a day? Is it a week? Or does it take, you know, doing this for a while before you're like, okay, where's my yoga mat in my bathroom?
Well, yoga works like a lot of the great religions and wisdom traditions with the 40 days. So I think 40 days is like a great goal for anyone. Like if you got the book, just be like, I'm just going to go to my mat 40 days in a row. And I don't need to do anything fancy. I don't need to do a long practice. You know, you could do, again, if you finish the book, like you'll have a completed personal ritual by the end, because there's a downloadable worksheet that you can fill out with the quizzes in each chapter. So it's like a build-a-bear done for you kind of thing. But you could say, you know what, I'm going to do that, or just part of it, or just the breathing technique, or just come to my mat to lie down. Just come to my mat in some way, shape, or form every day for 40 days. After that, I don't think you can ever go back, because you'll just notice the difference.
And your kids and your husband will too.
Mm-hmm. They will. I mean, I think one of the biggest things I've learned as a mom is just how much what I say to my kids is irrelevant, and what I'm modeling for them is everything, right? They are just watching me like a hawk and modeling my behavior. It's one thing for me to tell them something. It's completely different for me to embody and role model it for them. So to me, that it just makes it so critical that like they need to see me practicing self-care. They need to know that people need time to recharge. Sometimes that's alone. Sometimes it's with them. And it's actually great because I invite them to join me on the mat so much. Like sometimes they'll be randomly like, I won't be in the mood to do yoga. And they'll be like, Mommy, let's do yoga. Aww. And so then they're like forcing me to get on the mat, which is so great.
Yeah. That honestly, like my boys are my biggest motivator to work out in this room and show them, even if they're just walking by in the hall and I know they see me, I'm like, okay, that was a small win, because I know, just like you said, they're watching and absorbing your energy in every moment, good or bad. So it's definitely encouraging to lean towards the good.
Yeah.
Okay. We are at the end of time. If there were one final message that you would want to leave with the listener today, what would that be?
Notice your breath today. You can ask yourself these questions. Am I breathing fast or slow? Do I feel the breath more in my belly or my chest? Am I breathing through my nose or mouth? And just this inquiry process of asking yourself these questions, even better if you can get your hands on your body, like ask yourself that with your hand on your chest and belly. Just asking yourself those questions and the attempt to notice your breath soothes and calms your nervous system. This has been proven by science, guys. So even if you don't actually end up changing your breath in any big way, just that process, is that inquiry process, is going to start changing the hormones and peptides and how everything is functioning in your body. So notice your breath today in the little moments, at school pickup later, when you're cooking later. Just notice how you're breathing. It's an incredible journey. And yeah, I hope to stay connected to you all and get the book.
I love it. Okay, so please let us know how our listener can find you online, get the book, and do the free videos, or the videos attached to the videos mentioned in the book.
Yeah, so the book comes with like 20 or 21 companion videos, because I know some people are more visual and like to learn that way. I have a huge YouTube channel, so if you search my name, Brett Larkin, B-R-E-T-T, you can find tons of free practices with me on YouTube. My website is brettlarkin.com if you want to train to teach or deepen your practice. And the book Yoga Life is available everywhere books are sold. So you can get it at Amazon or bookshop.org, wherever you like to buy your books.
Beautiful. Brett, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and speak to the listeners today. Your story is incredible. Your book is incredible. Love the quizzes. It's awesome. And just thank you for everything that you're doing in the world, especially for all of us busy moms.
Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, where we navigate the beautiful chaos of motherhood together. For more inspiration and insights, please visit our website at motherhoodunstressed.com, or you can visit me on social at motherhoodunstressed. Remember, you are not alone in this journey. Until next time, stay unstressed, empowered, and embrace the joy of motherhood. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next episode.